Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kaveh Kavusi, and I'll be discussing a diverse array of subjects that span from my experiences in the emergency room to the furthest reaches of the universe. I'll be hosting guests, inviting illuminating conversations that at times may challenge ways of thinking or being, while also nurturing curiosity, meaning, and awe into life. Please consider subscribing, liking, saving, or sharing this podcast with any of your friends or family if it feels right for you. Thank you for taking the time. Let's dive into the podcast. Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining me again. This is episode 3 of season 2 of the Layered Prescriptions podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Kaveh Kavusi. I'm joined on this episode with my dear friend, Chef Devin Rajkumar. That's how everyone knows him as, the chef part. And many of them engage with his content, learning how to put the right ingredients together to make a magnificent meal. And yes, he's a maestro. But we get to know in this podcast some of the hidden ingredients that he only reveals to some people, and he makes them known in this podcast. And even though I've had friendship with him for over 17 years now, I get to know different layers of him through this podcast, and I'm grateful that we had this revelatory moment for us to explore some of the subjects that were near and dear to his heart, how there were some things that were challenging for him that he has been navigating through, and now he's alchemized into empowering him as he moves forward on his mission, one through cooking and through the others that he brings forward in this podcast as well too. We touch on subjects like what friendship even is, as ridiculous as that sounds, how so many groups of friends are actually people who enable their coping behavior. And we go into that in particular in this podcast, and you see how it impacts him. We recorded that up north in Toronto, and by the time this podcast is being released, the seasons have definitely changed. But I feel like this is one of those timeless conversations where you get to know Devin on a deeper level. Thank you for taking the time to listen to it. If you feel compelled to like, share, subscribe to this podcast, please do so. If there's someone that you feel that could resonate with this as well. And without further ado, please enjoy this podcast with Chef Devin Rajkumar. I feel like I'm here. So, all right. Start off with quiet and let nature be your background, right?
It's so still. I just see the branch flowing back and forth. It's a big change from where I came from.
Yeah.
In the city. Well, I'm not even in the city. I'm just north of it. But still, there's always cars honking. There's always a dog walking outside. There's always something. But here, there's nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing yeah. but my breath.
Yeah.
And a gentle, cool breeze.
I want to preface that we're not on any psychedelics. But nature's the psychedelic, right?
No doubt.
Yeah. Keep saying in the ER, like, nature, when you're in nature, you're reminded of the nature within yourself. And it you can feel that here. It's palpable. You almost feel like, I don't know, I feel the realness and rawness waking back up in me.
So we started.
all right. So I'm going to welcome my next guest onto the podcast. He's one of my homies that I've known for probably 17 years, I'm guessing, on the high end. Probably around when I was 19. And I'm 36 now. This is my homie, Devin Rajkumar. A lot of you may know him from the meals that you're now prepping began with him. Thanks for taking the time to come up, man.
Thank you for having me, man. It's special. I've been wanting to do this for a minute, ever since I knew you were doing this. And as I mentioned to you earlier before in the kitchen not too long ago, whenever I speak to you, it's for several minutes at a time at a birthday party or at a gig or something like that. And it's always very powerful. We share a few sentences back and forth, or several minutes or 10 minutes, but it's always very impactful. And not blowing smoke up your ass or anything, but you always offer an alternative, an alternate lens or a different perspective as to what might be going on in my head. And I know we'll get into this a little bit later. It might seem a little bit confusing right now, but I do appreciate the insight and the perspective, because I tend to look at things in one direction and have been learning so much on this spiritual journey over the past couple of years that everything's kind of new to me, and I feel like a puppy. I feel like a baby. I'm absorbing so much stuff. But you have a way of grounding me and bringing me back, and I'm just learning a lot, so I'm grateful.
Oh, I appreciate that a ton. And as you're speaking and I'm hearing that, I'm like, if it's always the serious reflections, am I still fun? Because there's often like there's me and my fiance at times, we're like, we don't get invited to certain things unless people need to work through their shit, and then that's when we're invited to come and play. So it's like I appreciate that a ton, and I'm like, am I a fun guy too? And that's a reality that came up there. And then the other thing that came through is like, this guy is such a steward of expertise in front of the camera and in behind a microphone that I'm like, I'm really excited to be speaking to see Devin deconstructed. And like, I mean, the name of the podcast is Layered Prescriptions, right? So it's about discovering the what you embody today is a testament to all the layers of the experience that you've had before and what people come to meet. And in the share that you just brought forward is like, I appreciate that that's the thing that if I were to die today, that's what you remember me for.
Yes, and yerba.
And yerba. You don't even know what it is yet, and you're about it.
I know it's gluten-free, and it's from Argentina.
Yeah. Devin's going through right now a withdrawal of a temptation that we created through anticipation with ping pong.
Yes.
What is ping pong for you?
Wow. What is it for me? It's exhilarating. There is a fulfilling component to it. Like, I feel fulfilled when I'm playing it, and it's just adrenaline and endorphins being released, and I think what you're trying to get at, but I'll keep it real. It's like it's an opportunity to dominate.
Yeah,
you know, it's an opportunity to flex, and it's just one of my favorite pastimes. It always has been, even if I'm getting my ass kicked.
Yeah,
by Atik, which happens, you know.
What's your win percentage rate roughly
when I play?
Yeah.
I don't lose often.
Let's be real. All right.
I don't lose often.
Yeah.
There are some guys out there who are incredible, guys that I can't hold a candle to. But for the most part, I do pretty well. But I've also invested so much time into it, man. Like, I've played a lot, and I've played so much, and I love playing. People will say that I'm good at certain things, and I've put so much time into it. I've invested so much into it.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, I was obsessed with it and I played for a month. No, man, I've been playing since I was a kid, and a lot. I love it.
Yeah. Well, there's something I've come to know about you, and I've discussed this with you probably every time I see you, but I've been deconstructing at least my perception on why I think it is. And Devin, he wins everywhere I see him. And I remember like a few years ago we played squash, and you barely knew how to play, but then within a few weeks, we didn't know how to play because you dominated. And I could see a focus that you had that I don't think I've ever touched before. I only think I touch it when I'm near death. And that's what got me curious about the amount of laser focus that you're able to bring yourself into in different domains and facets that you had. What brought that forth? And then I shared that thing with you, and I don't know if you're comfortable with me sharing it as well too. It's just a hypothesis.
The superiority complex thing? Absolutely, man. Yeah. I'm here to be vulnerable, and I'm here to learn. Yeah. And if there's an opportunity for one other person to learn from it, then that's great. You can share anything. I'm cool with it.
So what did you feel when I shared? Like, you know what's crazy? As I'm sharing it with you, I see your face come into details even more, because this is like, when you're getting vulnerable with someone, and the stakes are higher, your systems to detect the world come online even more, and then the details in front of you come alive. Call it presence. This is almost like fight or flight and survival meets the opportunity to thrive. And I just interfaced with that as I thought I'm going to expose you.
You are not wrong. When you were sharing what you did by the counter earlier, a part of me felt threatened.
Yeah.
A part of me felt like you were looking at me in a way that the average person can't see me. And you were kind of like deducing based on everything you know about me and stuff like that. You were kind of able to form a hypothesis like you mentioned. But yeah, I remember feeling threatened at first. I remember feeling like, oh my God, there's actually a deeper underlying reason for why I behave this way or why I act out in this way. And then there was a honest truth, a sense of liberation.
Yeah.
Because I have an understanding of it now.
Was that your first time that you thought? So maybe I should give context.
Please,
Yeah, so... these people that I see in the world that excel, I'm always wondering like what's behind that's driving that in particular, why can't I touch that? Maybe some people think that I'm that way as a doctor, but I don't feel like I am in most ways. I look around and among my peers, I'm way behind. But there's this other part of me that comes up and feels that at times I'm ahead of my peers in a particular way. It may not be true. None of it may be true. But in those moments, I feel like I thrive in that. And what I was acknowledging first, this thought originated first with Devin, because having known him and seen him relentlessly beat me in the things that we're doing either competitively or just like we're doing for play, but then play is like, I almost know I'm not going to win that day. I started thinking with Devin, I'm like, what breeds that level of excelling? And then I looked up and I see the rest of the world who achieves according to society standards. And so I thought, there must be a superiority complex that's here. And it may not be true, but that felt like that's what the thing is. And that superiority complex is the thing that hovers up top and drives you forward. But the thing that actually drives you forward the most and propels you to stay in this space is the fear of failure. And so the people oscillate between the superiority complex and the fear of failure. And so, like, to just expand on that, is the superiority complex originates at a time where we can't just be received as who we are in that moment. And so a conditionality clicks in. And so we learn to cope and adapt in the world in a particular way. And then that way ends up being vetted and improved on over and over again. And then someone in society may notice it and then revere you for that ultimately. And then people will start going up higher. And then they get revered for that particular thing that you excel at compared to others. Yeah. But if you start not being able to meet that demand, because it's a coping mechanism rather than you, it's a part of you, it's not you. When you start not being able to meet that demand, you fall a little bit, the energies wanna like slow down, and you touch this thing that starts getting close to the fear of failure.
The insecurity.
So that's the insecurity is the feeling that, yeah. And when you are here, you either find ways to adapt and stay up there, or you find ways to pacify the discomfort that exists down here, and you have an entire society of distractions and substances that alleviate the burden of this thing. But the great gift is, like you had just said, you felt you went through the discomfort to getting to a place of liberation. When you get into spaces where you can share that oscillation, be witnessed for the mechanism that is being perceived as coping, because that can be threatening if someone says you're coping, and be witnessed and not judged. The word is unconditional witnessing. Mm-hmm. You witness the person in their purity of the expression of what they are and the part of them that's been yearning to connect for a long time, and in that fear of failure, that insecurity that's there. That quality is so existentially painful for so many that they won't go there, and they rather die than touch that thing. But when there's someone that you're in the presence of, or a person, place, thing, or you're near death, truly, you wake up to the reality that, like, it was never real, and there's a liberation there. And hopefully you have time to touch that, make quality with that, make contact with that, and go through a grievance.
So this is what I was talking about. But that's a lot.
Sorry.
But to sum that up.
How would you sum that up?
Well, this goes back to what I was saying before about always learning when I'm around you, right? You're able to take a situation in my life or something about me, a quality, a characteristic or behavior, whatever it is, and you're able to provide a different lens for me. 3 years ago, prior to this spiritual journey that I've been on, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I would have felt very threatened with what you said. And in fact, I can think my instinct would be to just dismiss it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to believe. But after spending so much time digging up my childhood and going back to the fears and the resentments and the insecurities, and it's like I understand what you're saying now. And there is a validation that comes by excelling at a lot of different things. And I can understand now that maybe potentially one of the reasons why I've been so driven and I've put in so work and I've been so ambitious and I've been so hardworking at mastering or at least excelling at certain things is because of an insecurity and that superiority complex. You talked about oscillating back and forth and between that really uncomfortable place where I would choose to escape.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's kind of a lot for me to absorb right now.
Yes.
It's hard for me to establish exactly where I'm at And again, that goes back to me learning. I'm not sure all the time where I am, but one thing I can say for sure today is I'm much more aware and I'm much more open to these types of conversations and these deep dives.
Yeah. Dude, like I appreciate that a ton because but I feel like this is where life is not, it's not a but, it's and. This is where we make contact with life again. And I want to be mindful to, like, one thing that I like among a group of people that I walk around is they like be mindful to not give unsolicited advice. And it's, I sometimes overstep on that because I'm like, time is of the essence. Like,
I sense that.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it right at the beginning of the podcast. Like, am I still fun? One thing I will share with you openly and candidly is that whenever we have met, it always leads into a deep dive of that other person. I find that you will, after just a few short words as how are you, and if someone shares, you take whatever that is and you begin to break it down and deconstruct it and analyze it. Now, like I said before, I'm open to this and I'm grateful for that relationship. And I'm happy that you're comfortable to share these things with me. Yeah. But I will share as well that it can be a lot. It can be a bit overbearing. And it's also important to recognize, for me, if I was in your position, I want to ensure first that that person is in a headspace and open to receiving what they may feel is judgment, right? And what they may feel as someone just kind of overstepping a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's something to think about.
Yeah, man. I catch that. In the ER, some people have been like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're right. The fuck am I? And you know what, it plays into the story probably of where I have seen imposition culturally. People will be like, you know, you've got your space, and parents came right in.
What do you mean by imposition?
Imposition is that, like, they're taking their position in and they're imposing.
Okay,
so their imposition is my presence is here. I've got some things. I don't want to connect with the world this way. I don't want to go through my depths right now. I got things to do. Like I actually have to shit. Like, I don't want to be... Anyway,
Anything else but that.
Yeah.
Could, yeah.
And now this person is like, no. Show me all of your layers right now. And where did that first start? Probably with mom and dad. Like, where they were like, tell me the truth. And you didn't want to share the truth. Truth didn't want... Maybe you didn't even know what the truth was.
I said anything but as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big notice. Think when you go on this like spiritual path, a lot of the things that comes back is like you go back to the parts of you from childhood that maybe were not resolved or whatever. And something that I as I was sharing with you, I'm curious if you still want to stay there, is as I was talking about it, because I haven't thought of it really to this degree until you've been in front of me, is when you have a superiority complex, and I can talk about mine as well too. But I'm just talking, I think every human being has their own, where they feel like they have an edge that they try and nurture, and then there's a fear of failure in some way that really hurts them, and so they cope. But the thing that we want to be seen by is this, there was a person that we first wanted to be seen by, and at the superiority complex, there's probably a person that you want to be seen by for what you're doing, and the inferiority complex is the person that you feel you'll be punished by if you touch that. Does that bring up anything for
my
you?
My dad, right away. Immediately, I wanted to be seen by him growing up. I wanted to be validated. I wanted to feel that connection with him. And I felt a disconnection from him for a very long time. And I thought because I was so connected to my mother, who is one of the most generous, compassionate, kind, soft, sensitive. I have some of those qualities too that probably came from her.
Yeah.
There's some. But I thought...
Like that smile.
What's that?
Like that smile.
So I thought that... getting that from my mom, I didn't need it from my dad. It's only growing up and deep diving and digging up a lot of stuff that I realized that we're, I don't know, you could probably attest to this, that we are kind of biologically hardwired to receive that type of love and affection and emotion from both of our parents. So I didn't really know about that too much. But as you're speaking immediately, like as you were talking, just the photo of my dad popped in my head the whole time.
Yeah. Is there anything that comes up if dad were to see this right now? Would he be open and receptive, or would he...
Man, to be honest with you, our relationship had been rocky for many, many years. We are at a better place now, which has come via a lot of acceptance on my part. A lot of the resentments that I've... And I'm just giving some context prior, but a lot of the resentments and a lot of the things that I held against him for so long, I've let go and released them so I could be more free. Almost taking responsibility for all this angst and emotion and just anger that that I kept inside, you know. So I actually did a podcast with Gents Talk. I don't know what Samir asked me, but I just went off, man. I went off and I just became so vulnerable and I shared everything. And my dad actually watched it. He didn't provide me with too much feedback. He shared some things with my mom, which my mom then relayed to me. I'm sure someone watching can relate to this, that, you know, either your mother or your father is the mediator between the child and the parent. And yeah, so exactly. So my mother relays a lot of information to me directly. And I'm sure he heard some things in there that probably shook him up a little bit. But ultimately, I just want to let go of a lot of this stuff. You know, I held on to it for so long, and I don't want to be in that place anymore. Mm-hmm. So if he watches this, sure, I mean, I might just even send it to him. I would just hope that he's proud that I'm being honest and I'm being open. And for one, not once in my life, but more and more now, I'm being more consistent with being my authentic, genuine self. Because many of my close friends from our circle will tell you that, like, I wore a mask for a long time, right? I acted in a certain way to make people believe that everything was okay, you know? A crazy history with substance abuse and stuff like that, which we can or cannot get into. I mean, I'm okay to share all that today. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's a really long answer to your question. But if my dad saw this, yeah, I would hope that he is open-minded to hearing what I have to say. And I'm no longer behaving like a 10-year-old child anymore, because all that fear and resentment and all those feelings that I had, they're coming from the perspective of a child. But I'm no longer that child anymore. I'm older, I've grown up, and I understand today that it's my responsibility to do what I have to do for my mental.
Yeah. I'm glad that you said it as responsibility and not obligation, because it's a responsibility that we have, but it's an opportunity also that we have. We can keep that to the side and never address that. But the opportunity is an expansive opening and liberation where we reconnect with ourselves in a way that is beyond what we can potentially envision, because you create a really good space that you don't have to go there again. And it sounds like the story sounds very familiar to me as well. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine how, like, man, when I'm in the ER and I see patients with their father on their deathbed, and you'll see a son or a daughter come in, and I've shared this before, but like it is seared in my mind. The son comes in, running in, and his father's on his last breaths, last moments, and all he wants to do is connect. None of the stories that we carry are present at all. None of it matters, just connection. I wish that was available to everyone long before the last moments of the human experience ends for both people, where that connection wants to be nurtured more. And the gift that we give to one another by having these challenging conversations is opening the avenues within ourselves that ends up opening the avenues to the community that we're in. But often there's a yearning on the inside for that person, that first person that we wanted to connect with on the level that we're now connecting, wanted to be able to connect with them in that way.
It's a last chance, right? It's a last effort at that point. Yeah. It's intense, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we get the opportunity, but not many people are in the resuscitation bay or the trauma bay of the hospital. But you can create those instances. Like, literally anyone listening right now, working with parts of yourself that have an intimate relationship with the person that you yearn to connect with, but have the greatest difficulty, that ultimately allows you to have tools to create opportunities to connect back with them, because maybe they never had the opportunity for that. I really think that we're living at an amazing time where we're getting so many perspectives that it gives these opportune moments of reconsideration for ourselves on how we want to experience our life and how we want to connect. And I would love to offer that gift back to our parents, who are these stewards who head down and moving forward at the expense of the opportunity to connect. Because I think at our core, they want to connect as well too.
But how do you suggest to someone, like, from me looking in, like, I understand what you're saying, and I can say honestly that I've made efforts to connect, and I'll continue to do so more so than I have before, right?
Yeah.
But for someone listening, like, how do you suggest to them to make that connection out of nowhere? Like, someone's in their car right now listening to this, or they're on a beach or wherever they are. They're at their office and they'd like to connect to somebody, one of their parents, and they haven't before.
Yeah.
And they're not on their deathbed, but, you know, we don't want it to get to that point. Like, how do you suggest? Where do you start?
Whose podcast is this? I'm joking. Well, I'll start by just a reflection that came up first, which is that Rumi quote that, "Do not seek for love, seek the barriers that are preventing you from experiencing it." That's not the exact it's paraphrasing. But if there's something you want to experience, it's not finding that path directly, it's finding what's in the way.
Right.
And so, and being real and honest with yourself about what you are potentially keeping in the way that is a story potentially, and potentially and maybe a reconsideration of if you've created space, like, do you live on the other side of the country? And you're like, no, I'm thriving here. But then you catch the story that it's like, no, because it's difficult to be at home. We're talking about Ram Dass earlier. Yes. Ram Dass says, like, if you think you're enlightened, go spend a week with your family. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would argue that it's not the thing you want to have. It's the thing that's in the things that are in the way. And then it's having a real and raw conversation. And maybe because we develop so many good tools, behaviors, emotions, responsibilities to actually see that, it's so beneficial to have an objective other that you can have that dialogue with, or someone that you can be real and raw with, where you can drop the armor and there's a mirror that comes up and you see yourself. Mm-hmm. And then there's an avenue through. And I don't know if you know who Carl Jung is.
I know the name.
Yeah, Carl Jung is this psychotherapist that created Jungian psychology. And one of the things that he reiterates over and over again is art as the cure for neurosis. And I think of, for example, you as the chef that you are. When you're immersed in creating food, are you present to the meal, like in a way that gets you outside of your stories, or are your stories cluttering you?
It's a great question. What I'm thinking about in the moment that I'm preparing food,
yeah,
is the reactions and the emotions, the state of mind that the person eating it is going to be in. That's exactly where I am. I'm actually impressed with myself on a personal level at how easily that answer came to me, because as you were talking, that's what I'm thinking about. Like, when I'm there prepping, like, I just did this charity dinner not too long ago, just last week. The whole time prepping, even the day of, it was an iftar dinner, so I was fasting. I wasn't even eating all day. But as I'm cooking, I'm thinking about, how is this person going to react to it? Is it going to hit them the way that I want it to? That's what I'm thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you feel the intimacy of connection there?
Between myself and them, or myself and the food?
Yourself in the moment, because there's a relational intimacy that happens there.
No, I'm not present to that.
Okay.
Just the fact that you just peeled off another layer of the onion for me there, right? Like I mentioned before about offering another perspective. So as you ask that question, immediately I'm thinking about my connection to the food or my connection to the person I'm cooking it for. But I would never think, what is my connection to that moment? Like, am I fully present in that moment and connected to it? And that's very interesting to think about. So no, I'm not, because I wasn't even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have two pieces of evidence right here of what's in the way. It's the perspective on focusing on how the person is going to be experiencing it,
right,
and the preparation itself. Those are at least two.
Right.
So what's in the way is that. And we catch ourselves when we're like, okay, you can have that dialogue with yourself in that moment where you're like, I'm seeing that I want this meal to be XYZ for mm-hmm. this person. I'll be with that in a little bit, but I want to be here. Like, I'll connect back with you in a moment, and then see if that a part of your inner world trusts that you're going to come back to that, because part of the you are leading, you're responsible for that meal. So this is how you're showing up to society. The notoriety, the responsibility, the role that you're playing is met through the creation of the curation of that food.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an experience that you're ready to deliver. And are you in that experience? That's one of those questions that ends up coming up here.
I will be more mindful of it going forward. That's for sure. I do want to take it back for a minute, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to go back to that question about being able to connect with someone, you know, a sibling or a child to a sibling, yeah, or an immediate family member. And I want to challenge you further.
Yeah.
This is very much your podcast, but I want to ask you about step two. So for me, step one would be making a decision that I want to do whatever it takes to be able to connect with this person and potentially build that relationship or that connection that I've longed for my whole life. So once I've established that, once I've made that commitment to myself, then what is step two? Because you offered a quote, which I appreciate, and you offered your
two quotes,
and you offered your insight on it, and you spoke about it a little bit. But I'm looking for, like, I'm someone who I need crisp, clear direction.
Okay.
Is it pen to paper? Like, I want you to tell me exactly what I need to do. If and I know it's different for everybody, but I want to challenge you a little bit on it.
My ChatGPT, like, just with this. I'm also right after a night shift. I came up here. So this is, do you see these are protectors that I'm saying here rather than just delivering a straight answer? And I love that. That's one of the multiple expressions of humanity, right? So what I would think of first that is actually it comes back to that unsolicited acknowledgement where does this person want to hear that from you? Is that the what they want to be experiencing from you? It's important to you to be able to connect with them. But in their eyes, they're already connecting according to what their system has brought forth. Sure, and the years have reinforced that. So the first thing is acknowledging, is this for you or for them? You may ultimately think and know in your heart that this is ultimately for them as well too. But if you're bringing them to the edge of a cliff where they're existentially going to see themselves and see potentially the horror of carrying years of inability to actually connect with their loved one the way that they could have, that can be so painful and burdening to the system. And so creating the environment for that, I think, is a beautiful set and setting, kind of like a psychedelic experience, because that's what it's going to be, where you work into it over time. And your embodiment of it, where you're saying, I love you as you are, like your acceptance that you're having, has that opportunity for connection available. Your hand is out in all moments. And after a while, they're saying, whoa, I haven't seen that hand out here before like this.
Right.
And eventually there's a moment and maybe the set and setting where they're like, Devin, I'm experiencing Devin, or I'm experiencing my loved one in a completely different way. And they have their hand out. Can I put my hand out too?
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be with words, but it's definitely with the embodiment. And if the set of that the setting of that place, that moment, allows for that person to reconsider what connection is, now there's a bridge of opportunity that I think ends up being nurtured. And so it's, if there is a simple avenue to be able to connect to a person, I think we would all be doing it right now. So it's in the nuance and complexity, there is invitations that can be had. And I think it's something closer to that. What do you think?
It sounds scary AF when you describe it like that. And when you talk about it being like, you know, the right environment or the right setting in order for that to happen, immediately I'm starting to think about like, how many attempts do I have to make then? Like, do I have to keep my hand outstretched there? Do I want to potentially put the burden of all of their insecurities and trauma on them kind of thing? Like, you did mention that it might unearth a lot for them. Do I want to put them through that at this fragile age that they are at? Having said that, I've made leaps and bounds. Both my father and I have made leaps and bounds to connect with one another. It's far from perfect, but it's quite far from where it was for a long time, which was little to no communication and being civil just to be civil. Lot to unearth there, but I agree with what you're saying. It sounds intimidating, man. It sounds scary to put that hand out there.
Yeah,
you don't know what you're gonna get, and of course, I have a fear of being rejected.
Yeah,
I have a fear of failing at that, or a fear of, you know, is it something that I'm doing wrong, or is it something that I'm not enough for that, you know, we can't make that connection kind of thing. Like, it takes me back to when I was baby deaf.
Yeah. So do you think that you choose, well, along those lines, do you feel like you choose people in your life that you don't have to touch that?
It's heavy, bro. Do I feel like I choose people in my life where I don't have to get that deep with them?
Where you don't have to go to those places. Yeah. Like, you're going to nurture such a connection that all of us want to be vulnerable in the presence of another, but you know, vulnerability is, there's a pain to it. There's a weight to it. So don't need to go there. We were talking before we got on this that friends, a lot of friends groups that people will choose are
that
actually
blew me away. That rocked me.
Yeah. What do you remember from that?
That really rocked me. Man, what I took away from that was basically you shared with me, and it made perfect sense that, and I'll speak from my perspective, Devin.
Yeah.
So I would keep friends around that enable me to do ultimately what I want to do, right? And when you said that, it kind of rocked my world a bit, because for so long I felt so close to certain people and I kept a lot of people around, but they enabled me to escape, and they allowed me, they gave me a space to just kind of numb myself and not be myself kind of thing. When in reality, I thought that that was my happy place, my safe place. Mm-hmm. That's where I felt accepted, et cetera, et cetera. That was kind of the gist of
it. It's transactional though, right? Because it's an agreement that happens among two people. So they're not, it's not to be blamed. It's
no,
an acknowledgement, right?
Because
we offer to them the same agreement. You support me in enabling as I cope with the world this way, and I agree to support you that way as well too.
Reciprocal.
Yeah, so there's a reciprocal thing, and I'd argue that a lot of friends groups are closer to that, but there's a gift that happens when you're among people. I feel that you can be in your truth, your realness, your rawness, and your vulnerability, and that be okay.
Yeah, I feel like I got a bit choked up there for a second, and I had to gather my thoughts before I answered that question, but one of the reasons why is because my friend circle has completely shifted from what it was for 20 years to what it has been over the past 2 years since I've gone sober, and since I've started to do the work and seeking the spirituality and seeking the awareness and self-love and all that stuff that I've been doing. I love a lot of people from a distance now, you know, people that I considered brothers, sisters. I love them from a distance now. Some are still quite close to me, but there has been a massive shift and a massive auditing of my circle that has happened. So to answer that question, I got a little bit choked up for a second, because it's like I'm answering it and it's like I'm living it at the same time. Like, I understand that I was with people that we were enabling each other kind of thing. And now that I remove a certain component of that relationship, or I remove a certain component from my life, from my headspace, there's not all that much there anymore for me. And that's okay, right?
Will you tell me?
Absolutely. I mean, it's part of growth. It's part of evolving. I read this great quote one day, man, and it said, just because we were best friends growing up doesn't mean that we have to be best friends 20 years later. And that rings true. Like, my best friend in grade one, I don't even speak to him anymore. I just thought about him recently, actually. Chris Manu, love you. But I haven't. He popped into my head the other day, and I'm like, we were best friends. And I haven't spoken to him ever since. And we change. We grow up. We start to like different things, and you veer off in your own direction, and that's cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Try and look in the camera again one more time and say it, but say it with I at the start.
I what?
Love you.
I love you?
Yeah. Say it with the I, because the I is a declaration. Love you is like, what's up?
Right? To Chris?
Yeah.
Chris Manu, I love you. And I'm glad you got me to, that's almost like typing it out instead of putting the letter U.
Yeah.
Like I-L-O-V-E-Y-O-U. One of my friends actually calls me on that. If I say L-U-V-U, she's not cool with that.
Yeah.
By the way. Anyways, you know who you are. I love you too.
Yeah. Well, dude. Well, the gift that, you're right. Every human interaction that we have, no one is obligated to be there. It's a choice.
Yeah.
In relationships, it's a bit tougher to see that. No one belongs to anyone. We choose to be with one another. In the same light with friends, it's the same thing as well too. And it's a beautiful dance that at some point it may get to an instance where you look them in the eye, or you look at them in their soul or whatever you want to say, and you say, I love you, but I must go.
Right.
And it's painful to do at times, because there's the entity of you, the entity of me, and then there's the entity of us. And I'm stepping away from the us, but why? Maybe I don't know who I am anymore. And so in that, or maybe I never got to know myself.
That resonates with me, never getting to know myself.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I spent so much time trying to be someone.
Yeah.
Someone accepted, someone that was validated, someone that was, you know, liked and all that.
Yeah.
And only over the past little while have I really started to kind of understand who I am. And to give you a real-time example on that, I always thought I was extroverted my whole life. If you asked me...
I think you are.
You think I am? Okay, yeah. So, but this is interesting. I actually put it on a Q&A on Instagram, and I got, like, am I introverted or extroverted? Or someone asked me, and I reshared the question, and I got, like, not hundreds, but I got a lot of responses back on what people thought I was, introverted or extroverted. And if you asked me my whole life, I would say without thinking, I'm extroverted. But then some people said, I think you're more introverted. And one of the closest people to me in my life said the same thing. And when I take away a lot of the layers of myself and like the substance, that all the substance abuse and all that stuff that was happening, I discover more and more that I like spending time alone. And I feel less inclined to go out and be social. My schedule, many of my friends will know, has a lot of the time been on the hour. So I'm here for an hour, I'm there for an hour, I'm there for an hour. My schedule is always full. But I feel like my schedule was always that way because I was too afraid to sit alone with my thoughts. I was too afraid to be by myself and be in this headspace. I always needed to have some type of distraction or stimuli in me or, you know, around me.
Yeah.
And now I find myself spending nights at home alone, like Friday nights and Saturday nights. You know, us growing up, we were at footwork or we were here or we were there. We were always somewhere or someone's bar. There's always something happening. But now I find a lot of comfort and I feel that. And I'm declining things. I'm declining weddings. I'm declining barbecues. I'm declining places to go out because I just want to keep that space for myself. Whereas before, very scary place for me. I didn't want to be in that space alone.
Yeah.
You know, and even if I was alone, I'd smoke a joint or I would drink or I would do something.
Yeah.
You know, just to stay away from the stillness of my mind.
Dude, that's a great catch though, because before you were saying yes, but they weren't getting your truth. Now people are getting a no, but they're getting your truth.
Yeah.
And that ultimately ends up being an enormous gift that we offer to one another. You know, it's crazy when you think about when people say, hey, we're going out on a night. There's this paradoxical yearning for connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the tool that we use to pacify the things that are in the way of that connection so we can soften onto a plane that allows us to connect there.
Right.
And then we find our people or we find places or settings or things that allow those circumstances to happen. So to tie back almost everything that you're saying about how to connect with those people, I'm thinking about the people that you have stepped away from right now.
Right.
Lovingly.
Yeah.
Can you first feel into maybe the pain that they're carrying in any way? Because they wanted to connect as well, too. That's what I'm getting at. So they wanted to connect as well, too, but there was something in the way, so they chose something that you guys both agreed upon.
Can I connect to their pain or...
Yeah, or do you have some awareness maybe any pain that they were carrying?
I do now.
Yeah.
I do now that I've removed myself from the situation.
Yeah.
From the environment. From their... Man, I'm gonna share something with you right now that's difficult for me to share, but it's like not incriminating, but it's heavy to share. The people that I used to party with the most, that I love the most for endless hours on end for God knows how long, when I think back to those moments, I can feel how sick, spiritually sick I was at that time.
Yeah.
And then I realize that everybody around me must have been in some way or shape or form that spiritually sick as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that answers your question, but I can identify that now going back.
Well, how do you, maybe this is an important point to ask. How do you define spirituality?
For me?
Yeah.
For me, spirituality is believing in something greater than myself. And mm-hmm. why that is so, and for me, that's the universe, that's the energy. I can't put a finger on it, but I feel like I don't need to. I know it's there. For me, the biggest part of spirituality for me, and reiterating what I just said, is I need to know that I'm not the biggest thing in my life,
mm-hmm.
that I am not in control, that I, you know, in some ways I am and in some ways I'm not, but ego deflation has been the biggest, most rewarding. It's been the thing that I've tried to action the most.
Mm-hmm.
I felt, and we were talking about having we'll always have a relationship with our ego. I feel like I developed an unhealthy one though, mm-hmm. to mask insecurities, right? And maybe this ties directly into the superiority complex we were talking about before. You know, I can see that association. I can see that connection now. But Yeah, it's just, this is all very heavy.
Sorry.
No, you don't have to apologize. Let's swim. You don't have to apologize. and like, I mean, I don't have to be sitting here. I don't have to be answering this.
But yeah.
I yearn for these types of conversations so I can vocalize and so I can learn more. But I actually just lost my train of thought as well.
That's okay. Well, let me, could I bring a feedback?
Please.
Well, I'll share what I think spirituality is.
Oh, yes. Go on.
And my homie Ryan Burkholder, we were in California. We just had an enormous psychedelic experience the night before. And we're sitting on this wooden bench, and we have this beautiful deer antler pipe that we're smoking some native tobacco from. Mm-hmm. And he says to me, one of my homies, David Amir Person, Rian, Kyle Dow, he says, spirituality isn't doing spiritual things. It's doing things with your spirit present.
Beautiful.
And if you think you're saying your spirit is sick, and I acknowledge in my times in my life where I felt I was disconnected and unavailable, at its core, I didn't feel that I was dancing in harmony with my spirit. My spirit wasn't safe to be there. And so there was tools that I would use to pacify the burden of lack of connection with that. And so the thing that we come back to here is we have a lot of environments that seem to exist that, well-intended, pacify the expression of us in connection with our own spirit. And I think there's this beautiful thing that was created in addition to that beautiful noise from the bird up there at Burning Man, where there's these two children that are putting hands together, one to the other.
Yeah.
But they're actually in the body of an adult, and the two adults are sitting back to back from one another. So their inner world was yearning to connect.
Right.
But the adults were separated and looking elsewhere. And I think that's what happens in every environment, this simultaneous paradoxical yearning for connection, but this adult separation that then we find a consensus that says, you know what, we're going to do something that alleviates the thing that's keeping us separated in order for us to connect. So I'm curious if the ultimate connection, if it's with Father that we want to practice, or it's the person that is the person that we want to connect with the most, we can practice our own capacity to be embodying the thing that we have been yearning for, which is greater connection to our spirit in multiple environments, where eventually you go to the environment that you once were reaching for something else, and now you just see it as a, like the steak that you ate yesterday, where you just acknowledge it and you're not connected to the thread and hijacked. And you meet a person who you used to connect with there, or you meet with them somewhere else, and you offer the opportunity to put your hand out and connect where once you were connecting in other ways, yearning for that spiritual connection, but meeting more physically and like transactionally.
Right.
That's the opportunities that we have to eventually work towards our own capacity to not be so invested in having to change the other person and just being there in how we've evolved into our capacity to connect, inviting the other, but not telling them that they need to be any other way.
You know, real-time observation, sometimes when you're sharing, and you do it very articulate, you know, is it articulately? You're very articulate when you speak. Articulate, you're very articulate when you speak. I find myself, like you say a lot of, for me, like a lot of times you say a lot of powerful things one after the other, and I get lost sometimes because I'm trying to marinate with something so powerful that you said, you know? I mean, like sometimes you speak and it's like, I have to take a moment to remind myself what pacify means, right? And then by the time do that, you've already gone on and said so many other important things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like an observation that I'm sharing with you. And it's not for you to communicate differently, or maybe it is, but I feel like there's a lot of weight and a lot of, there's very dense what you share. And sometimes I get lost in it because, how does that make you feel when I'm sharing this with you? Because I'm not trying to be insulting.
Yeah,
in
it's
any
been
way.
The ultimate. It's
a
been,
lot. It's a lot to and I'm like, I'm back here, and you're already gotten to here.
Yeah, yeah. three things come up. One, I'm grateful that there's technology that exists that we can come back to and watch it over again.
Yes,
you just back.
True.
Like you can just drag back, hit 15 seconds back. Like when I'm listening to some massive wisdom coming through podcasts or audiobooks, I'll hit that back maybe 5-10 times to hear it and let it digest all the way through. Mm-hmm. I like that you said marinated. It's such a chef adjective. But the invitation that a lot of people have asked me is like, say that again, but simpler.
I agree completely. I mean, that's why so many of us are obsessed with Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, because he takes astrophysics and, you know, presents this to us in simpler terms. And there's actually an insecurity there where it's like, where I'm sharing this with you and it's like, I think to myself, like, am I slower than the average person? Like, am I potentially dumb? Like, that word comes to my mind, that I can't process this at the speed of which you're speaking it, because you're clearly processing it and you're feeding it to me.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's something, I don't know. I think this is a great conversation to have, though, because I've never been realer.
Yeah.
Like, the way that I am now, it's not so much about being blunt and direct, but it's just about being genuine and sharing how I feel at the time and not in an effort to hurt that person or myself, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just very happy that we're even talking about this.
Yeah.
Because it happens. It's not just today. I remember the last time, whose house were we at for that birthday? It was Albert's house.
Yeah.
We were talking. I was standing up there. I think I might have been preparing some food, or you were burning pita at the oven or whatever it was. No, you weren't. I'm just teasing. But I remember you were talking, and it's like, man, this, like, I can't, like, I'm like processing B right now, and you're at G.
Yeah.
You know, in what you're sharing, so.
Yeah. Well, if you want me to, like, well, that's, I appreciate you acknowledging that. And I'm wondering if we hung out more regularly, because this is, I think, what my truth is. That's a frustrating thing that I come upon, which is so often when I'm writing, I'm thinking I have to change it for the other. But I get that there's an art in storytelling, and there's an art in connection and acknowledging that, because I hope that the parts of me that adapt to what you're sharing doesn't leave the parts of me that are the most important threads of my foundation behind. And I don't think I find enough avenues to connect with people on these type of layered conversations to in order to get clear on what can stay and what needs to go.
Yeah.
So I'd love to have these type of opportunities. Maybe the whole podcast premise is to rediscover simplicity.
Sure. Just to
it's the last episode. I just figured it out.
just to elaborate more on my perspective for more clarity. It's like, I feel that you're at a certain level. Yakum in niveau, right? And you're at this level here, and I'm down here, and it's hard to process. When you say something, it's like I need it to marinate. I need to braise it a bit, right? And kind of process it. But by then, it's like you've shared several more dense facts after that. And I feel like for someone who is a beginner in all this, I consider myself to be a beginner, and I feel like I always will be in many ways, and I'd like to remain humble there.
That's the best way to be, I think.
I'd love to remain humble there. I just feel like I'm speaking to someone who is, I don't want to say more advanced, but, you know, just, I just feel like there's so much to this self-discovery, and there's so much to this awareness, and there's so much to this spirit, and so many things that I've learned recently about myself, because I've always been living on the outside of myself, I feel like. Mm-hmm. I'm just learning all this stuff now. So I feel like when you're speaking sometimes, it's like I'm taking the 401, you know, instead of the 101. And I didn't mean that by the highway. I mean, it's like the advanced class when I'm still kind of in that beginner's class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, dude, if this is a thing that multiple people have told me, and you're sharing it with me as well now, this is probably rooted in some of my own superiority complex. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. And I take it with like a loving invitation to say like, hey, like practice simplicity. It's tough though, because I feel that I'm losing my authenticity.
Yeah.
In it.
Yeah.
But then it's probably because I don't feel like I'm communicating my wisdom, which I find my value when I create space. But in the space is where you digest, right?
Yeah.
And you're telling me that you're going through indigestion because of the amount of things that are brought forth.
Sometimes. And as you were speaking there, I'm reminded of how I am when I'm cooking and doing live demos and filming, and because I do so much of that. That's what I love doing. And if someone told me to adjust my voice, I would it'd be very troubling. Like, there'd be something very difficult for me to do, because then, like you said, like, I feel like I wouldn't be as authentic.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, maybe there's a balance there. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Well, I hope that everyone who's listening in this dialogue that I feel like we just went into a portal from, like, where is your voice being pacified or being invited to come forward?
Right.
Because we don't want to overimpose, and then we overestimate the imposition again that we may be having by taking too much space when it's not the case. But what Devin's inviting in is something that I think that I personally need to work on, which is I take space with what I share at times.
Right.
And I think I've just accumulated so much.
Yeah, man. It's like encyclopedia's worth, I feel, is up there. And I also want to mention that, like, it's me being vulnerable telling you this.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to ever come off like, I don't understand what you're saying. Like, I come from Devin in my 20s, like, wanting to be a know-it-all. I wanted to have every single answer. There was a time in my life where I remember working at the Food Dude's Kitchen through my 20s into my early 30s, and I never asked anybody any questions because I didn't want to show any sign of weakness or that I didn't know everything.
Yeah.
So basic questions or things about ingredients or techniques of cooking or, you know, anything, certain types of equipment, I always wanted to pretend like I knew everything. And now I'm in a space where, over the past several years, where I ask more questions than ever. Mm-hmm. Just traveling to Pakistan and cooking there, they are very much, in the kitchen, it's very much a hierarchy. It's like chef, you know, garde manger or commis or sous chef, that's their roles. But what I'm trying to get at is I can learn from everybody in that kitchen. And I ask everybody in that kitchen, the chef that's put or the cook that's put on staff meal, I can learn from them. I can learn from the dishwashers. I can learn from everybody in there. But for a long time, I didn't want to pretend like I didn't want anybody to know that I didn't know the answers. So for me to tell you that is me being vulnerable at the end of the day.
Dude, there's a crazy differentiation I'm acknowledging right now, which is when you're playing a role and you're hesitant to ask because you want to demonstrate acknowledgement.
Yeah.
You ask questions and you seek answers.
Yeah.
But when there's a part of you that's open to the adaptability of your role and to be witnessed more vulnerably, you ask with curiosity and you seek greater opportunity to explore what the answer is. So
right.
there's a more layer to it. So there's like Q&A and then there's C and E. And that C and E allows the possibility of you being witnessed, which is curiosity and exploration.
Mm-hmm.
I think that allows you to say, like, and if you have more spaces and environments for that, I think the leaders of the future are going to acknowledge that people, and they already know this, but do we allow this? Every human being is so much more than the roles that they play. Like, literally, my signature tag on my email is MD, what I do, not who I am.
Right.
And like, Chef Dev is known by many people that way, but he's so much more than a chef.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What aren't you?
What am I not?
Yeah.
What am I not?
Yeah.
I don't even know where to take that question. And I feel like that's the purpose of it. What am I not?
Yeah.
Can you give me an example of something you'd say about yourself?
Yeah. So what I'm not, you get clear on by, I think, having explored it and then disidentifying with it.
Right.
So what did I used to identify with that I no longer do?
What I am not is dependent on external validation.
Is that a truth or is that an aspiration?
It's a work in progress, daily practice.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's an important acknowledgement to differentiate, right?
Right, absolutely.
I think inherently we're primarily wired to get that feedback from the world. Are we doing good? Are we doing okay? Oh, yeah, we're social creatures. If you are fully just getting the validation and reinforcement from yourself, chances are there's nobody around that you're allowing mm-hmm. in. So there's an inherent softness that's allowed to it, and then there's a dependent agitation that asks the world to validate you, that you can reclaim and then disidentify from. And that's what I hear you communicating there.
What I am not is not enough. That's a fun one.
Yeah, what comes up there?
Again, those insecurities, like, will I fit in? Will this person like me? You know, will I be accepted? Will will I have an impact on this person? You know, will I feel some comfort there? Will I be loved? Mm-hmm. All that comes up in that.
Mm-hmm. What? Well, if today you lost the capacity to be Chef Dev,
oof,
where would you find your worth?
From within?
Is that a question or an answer? Because that's paradoxically perfect.
I don't know that there is a perfect. I think it's really subjective and stuff. But the reason why I say that is because, like, it's consistent with what I said before about the external validation. I spent my whole life looking for external validation, and I shared the same thing on City Line. The City Line episode aired today, where we had a mental health talk, where Tracy asked me, "What would you tell yourself 10 years ago, or what would you tell yourself as a kid?" And my answer was, I would tell myself to not care so much about what people think about me. I acted and did things in a certain way and said things and behaved in a manner by which I thought people wanted to see me. And that's why I answered it would come from within, because, like, and it goes back to, it ties into everything I'm saying about sitting in my bedroom by myself on a Friday night or a Saturday night. I'm no longer reaching for things outside of me to fulfill me and give me peace on the inside. I'm okay, like, just sitting here with no AirPods, with no cell phone, with nothing around me. I can do that now, but for most of my life, I couldn't. I always needed something else going on, some type of distraction,
mm-hmm.
right? So if Chef Dev disappears today, Chef Dev's a lot of pressure, by the way. We shared that in that other podcast. It's tough being Chef Dev all the time, right? And I can vocalize that, and, like, that's a whole other thing. But if you take Chef Dev away, I'm cool with just being Devin. Like, I'm just being Devin right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that. I'm cool with that. I don't need anything else, man. I've always needed something. I don't need anything else now, man. I just need to be honest with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to know I'm enough.
Yeah.
And that I'm okay to not be okay. All of that. And I need to pee right now.
I need to pee too.
Yeah.
All right, so... in truth, we took a little piss break, both of us. Something special about peeing in nature. How'd you feel?
I felt freedom. Because I was heading to the bathroom and you're like, no, come outside. And I said, here we go. But no, it's felt quite natural.
Isn't that something about, like, when we put ourselves in our nature, you're reminded of your nature, right?
Right.
Every time I come here is a ritual rather than a habit, right? Ritual is like you do things intentionally. Habit is you do things out of automatism.
See, that's an example of something I need to process. Right? No, seriously.
I'll pause.
Yeah, I need a pause there to... can you say it again?
A ritual is something that you do with intention.
Right.
A habit is something that you do out of automatism.
But what does automatism mean?
You don't have to think about it. You're unconscious. It
just
automatically happens. Yeah.
Involuntary. Okay. Habit is involuntary and ritual is intentional.
Yeah.
Okay. We may continue now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. For me, it's coming up here and, like, the initial pee out in nature is mine. What's a ritual for you? Do you have any rituals?
I'm sure I do. A current one is sitting alone with my own thoughts. I create space for that.
Yeah.
My own meditation. That's something that I do. I'm sure if I more fully understood it and absorbed it, I'd be able to offer some other examples, but drawing a little bit of a blank right now. Other rituals for me. Cooking for others, for sure, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I cook. I mean, I've always said this example because it's the truth. If you come over to my house, like, I'll spend as much time as I need to getting your plate ready. But then when it's time for me to plate mine, I'll just throw it all into the bowl,
mm-hmm.
you know? But
yeah,
cooking for others is a ritual. Mm-hmm. It's something that, I mean, it's very fulfilling for me, man. And when I do it going forward, based on what we discussed, I'll try to be more mindful to be connected to that moment.
Yeah.
And not so much of the outcome of it or any other distractions that might arise.
Well, that's a great thing that you bring up, because food can, like, cooking can still be habitual, right? The mother who cooks every day, for her, she feels deeply nurtured in it. She is grateful for it. The family expects it, even potentially. It can become automatic but you can reclaim the same thing that you do out of automatism or what you lead by normally and turning it into a ritual and intentionality by slowing it down and remembering your why and connecting to the thread of the moment. Mm-hmm. And I can think of a way to check in, maybe if there's something that you're doing even regularly and you're like, yeah, that's one of my rituals. If you're in that moment and you don't do it, do you feel uncomfortable or are you completely at peace? And that's the way to usually check it. There's someone who needs food cooking right now. There's an amazing thing and you have the tool for it.
Right.
If you don't even think about it and you do it, that's closer probably to habituality because it's the role that you play. Mm-hmm. But the ritual nature of it would be finding some way that it's you are there present to it. And a crazy thing to think about as humans is we have this pain pendulum and we always, in general, go towards the place of least discomfort.
Yes.
Less pain until a moment comes where it becomes more painful to not do that thing. And so the pain pendulum swings the other way. The way to think of it is like when you're studying for an exam, the exam is 3 weeks away. Mm-hmm. It's more painful in how you process it to be studying right now than it is to not be studying so you don't. But then that exam is tomorrow now.
Right.
And you haven't studied at all. Now it's more painful not to study than it is to procrastinate. So you don't procrastinate and you do.
It switches.
Yeah.
It switches.
So catch your pain pendulum in every moment and you'll get clear on where you're automatic, where you're stepping towards life, stepping away from it, and where ritualism comes in is usually a thing that can potentially be uncomfortable at the start. You lean into it anyway, and then this vastness opens up.
With the two examples you just provided, I just discovered it made it a lot easier for me to observe exactly what it is that you were saying with the cooking example and with the exam example.
Yeah.
Am I a visual learner in that case? Do I need analogies? Like what is that? What does that mean for me?
Well, it probably is that I would think that the way that I'm describing it is not clear on its own, but in story form, you can find relatability. And that's the beauty of storytelling, right? You paint a picture that people see in between the words. If I tell you like what a strawberry tastes like, none of the things I say will ever touch it. But there's a thread of if a story came up regarding the strawberry, that it'll bring up what a strawberry tastes like in that story. And that's the gift of when you're able to elaborate with something that you put beautiful points and then the story just comes up in between.
And strawberries are really expensive these days.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd stop buying them.
I don't know if we want. Yeah. Is there a... You know, there's points where you're like, where do you even go from there?
it just popped into my head. Seriously, I mean, pints of strawberries have gone through the roof. And I was buying them recently and I noticed them going bad very quickly. So I froze the last batch and going forward, I'll be more mindful of purchasing strawberries.
Maybe you can tell me if this is true because I've heard that when you buy frozen fruits, they're actually fresher because the moment they come in, they're put in and they're frozen versus fruits that you see in stores have been processing for a while or like out for a while.
Two things to note with this. The first thing is that yes, a lot of the fruits and a lot of different items of produce that you may buy frozen are frozen fresh. But the other thing to keep in mind is me as a chef or as someone who loves the integrity and textures of food, once it is frozen, the cell structure completely changes. It is waterlogged at that point, and it'll never have that same mouthfeel or texture that it did have prior to it being frozen. Mm. So yes, while you might have access to more fresher food when it's frozen, are you willing to give up the integrity of the texture of that item? Mm-hmm. And for me, it depends on the application of the ingredient in the recipe.
Well, it just brought up like an appreciation that we can experience foods in different states with human creation, where a fridge was created to preserve food for longer periods of time when before, maybe not even 70, 80 years ago, you had to eat the meal in a relatively rapid time, and humans used natural ingenuity for storage to preserve things, ferment things, for us to...
Salting, pickling, fermenting,
canning, for it to last for a long time.
Dehydrating.
Yeah.
Of course, or eliminating the moisture in some cases, yes, of course. Mm-hmm.
And then like we were talking earlier about where we solved problems before, and then there's the triumph of it. There's this arguably bastardization that can intermittently happen, where now we have products that are chemical preservatives like sodium nitrate, mm-hmm. which has a like carcinogenic properties on the stomach in higher quantities. And that's why, for example, one example of why women who are pregnant are asked to not have cold cuts while they're eating because of the preservatives that are in there. Right. So if we had just natural preservatives, completely fine for it to be the case. And also obviously for other diseases that can be in certain mm-hmm. foods that are more opportunistic when they're pregnant, but that's something different. I just wanted to put that point in because I know some people will be highly critical from a medical standpoint. They'll be right. like, why are you talking about the pregnancy thing? And now you're talking, why don't you talk about cheese as well? Anyway. Yeah, so
cheese, the most shoplifted item in the grocery store. How do I know this? Let me tell you. So I went recently to Ottawa to film a television show. It's actually streaming in well over 100 countries, but it's a show called Blitz, and it was one of the more difficult things that I've done. And basically, I have 45 minutes to cook 3 different dishes. All the mise en place, all the ingredients are gathered there. 45 minutes, the camera starts, and the host is hammering the chef, not just me, all the other chefs, with questions nonstop. So as I start cooking, I say what I'm cooking, but it's not about 2 tablespoons of this or now we're going to go to the fridge and grab our scallion. It's all about storytelling. Mm-hmm. And he's hammering me with questions. What has more vitamin C, an orange or a red pepper? An orange. No, it's red pepper. What's the most shoplifted item in a grocery store? You know, I'm going to name a chef, name 5 things about them. The first 5 things. And this is constant while you're trying to cook and get out 3 dishes. And that's how I know the answer to that question. But also with that experience, prior to me being more at peace with myself and more calm and just more in a tranquil place inside, it's a situation and environment that would have really, really done a number on me. And also with the acceptance that I've been practicing and just coming to terms with me and me being enough and all these things that we talked about earlier on the podcast, me doing well on this show or me performing to the best of my ability or me being accepted there and doing a good job, like that would have carried more weight than it did. But this is a good example, me going to do that show recently, where it's like, it's not like all my eggs were in one basket there. It's not like everything was riding on it. Because in the past, I've done auditions and I've shown up to work events and I've put so much pressure on myself to deliver mm-hmm. instead of just knowing that I have to go there and do my best. And now doing my best is enough. And I went there and I did my best. But whether it went well or whether it didn't go well, I mean, I just saw it like experience, and I just saw it like a win. Like there was no L to take there at that time. So a very interesting observation, and it's also showing me that I have some growth, right? I've come from where I was before, and now I'm in a place where there's just a lot more acceptance in my life.
Yeah. Well, in the spirit of ingredients that you're talking about right now, metaphorically or spiritually, what are ingredients that you're seeking to cultivate more into your life moving forward on the plate of life?
Oh, wow, what a good question. They are ingredients that I've already been trying to implement into my life. Self-love is a really big one. And self-love is so important to me today because Devin, I had what I feel is an unhealthy relationship with loving myself before, where I was doing things and, you know, whether that's ingesting something or experience something or saying something or going and doing something that I thought was me loving myself, but in reality, ultimately I was hurting myself, whatever that may be. You can use your own imagination, right? Mm-hmm. So self-love is something that, I want to continue to keep front and center, keep this awareness. You know, humility, man, I'll always go back to humility and ego deflation. Mm-hmm. I think I was chatting about it with you not too long ago, and you told me a few different things, but I mean, kind of segueing a bit here, but one thing that I love about our conversations together is that you take something that I see as maybe negative in my mind And then you show me that I have to show that not I have to, that there's an opportunity to show appreciation for it. Mm-hmm. It's like, if I didn't go through all the struggles and all the animosity and through all those hurdles in my life, if I didn't go through that period of lacking humility and over the top ego, then I wouldn't be where I am today. And there's I guess what it is that there's learnings from all these different stages in my life. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah.
You always kind of show me that other side of it. Like, mm-hmm. like I can also equate it to this. This is beautiful, man. I can also equate it to this, which is kind of like what you've been teaching me, is seeing the other side of things, or that there's not seeing the other side, but there's an alternate perspective or lens. Yeah. All the things I resent about my dad. Let's say it's A, B, C, D, E. All these things that I resent, that I wish would change, that I wish he would change, that I wish never existed, et cetera, et cetera. At the end of the day, I know how I don't want to act or behave, or I know how I don't want to, you know, comport myself. So ultimately, at the end of the day, I owe him, you know, and that's something that I came to on my own. It's like, I don't like my dad because he does this. Am I going to do it? No, I'm not going to do it. To who do I owe that to? I owe it to him. Mm-hmm. To know better, or to know how I don't want to behave.
You owe the credit to him, you mean, right?
I owe the credit to him, yeah. By him doing his thing, it taught me how I may want to do my thing.
Yeah.
But this is not something that I would have admitted before. I would have just stayed white-knuckled, right? I would have just stayed pent up in this anger and frustration, as opposed to kind of releasing, letting go, and kind of navigating that space to find, you know, a different perspective on it. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, self-love, humility, self-love, open-mindedness, man, so important. I'm open to having these conversations with you. I'm open to hearing what you have to say. I'm open to hearing the other side of it, or another side of it, man. I'm open to admitting my faults. I'm open to working on them. You know, I'm open to being vulnerable. You know, I'm open to I'm open to what's available to me now, because for a long time, what I did didn't work for me. It wasn't sustainable and stuff. So those are just a few things that are on my
ingredients list. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think you put those on at the start of the meal, in the middle, or after, for best preparation?
As necessary, as I'm in a headspace or mindful enough to engage in it, as needed. I mean, I don't think there's any particular time. I mean, I'd love to say all the time, but that's not true. I get caught up in my own head. Mm-hmm. You know, I get distracted. But that's why this conversation with you is amazing, because I can vocalize it and I can remind myself and just bring it into the forefront, like bring it into this current space where I'm at now.
Yeah. If you think of it the same way along the line of this, like this play on visualization, is that plate with more self-love, humility, and openness. Is shared with, we want to share that with people, right? And we want to be able to experience that plate as well too. And all, at the end of the day, food is an intimate experience. Mm-hmm. No different than sex. It's a beautiful immersion that's inviting you to the sensuality of life. And when there's those ingredients that are there, we're allowing the inner world to connect with the rest, with all of it. And that's, I think, one element of that spiritual game, if there were one.
Right.
Yeah. Like, well, even, sorry, go ahead.
No, you were going to say something.
I just think, as I'm saying that, there's a lot of, I think of people in the world who that would just sound fucking lame to.
Mm.
Even the word spiritual, what the fuck are you talking about? I think about a good chunk of the population that has been deeply disincentivized from the thought of it, because it meets the conditions of someone who is all of the things that society says, like you're weak or out of line or whatever it may be, to even consider that. And it saddens me a little bit. Like, it's, I'm thinking of the biker, or I'm thinking of the gang member, or right. I'm thinking of someone who's brought up in the world where they only know technology and value that comes through social media's reinforcements, and where they had so many opportunities so far in their life to connect to their spirit. It sounds so lame even in a phrase as I say it out loud. Do you know what I mean by that?
Bro, 10 years ago or 5 years ago, this entire conversation that we've had would have sounded lame to me.
Yeah.
I'm only now in a space where I'm being honest. I mean, as a male growing up in the type of culture that I did, you know, West Indian culture and stuff like that, and
cis binary, right?
What does that mean?
I don't even know. I'm just the pronouns. They're everywhere.
Cis binary. But what?
I don't know. I just threw it out there.
but yeah, growing up as a male and in the society that I did in the culture, like just taught not to show weakness and chinks in the armor, kind of what I was sharing about before. So conversations like this, like being vulnerable, digging deep, discussing childhood trauma, discussing what I'm afraid of, discussing of where I feel inferior, you know, discussing not being enough and all these things. This is not stuff that I would have spoken about before.
Yeah.
It's liberating now, and it's freeing at the same time. And
would you think most chefs that are at your level, aspiring to that level, or in a different, like the Michelin star guys, which you're headed for, where do you think they are in their capacity to connect to their spirit?
It's so subjective, man. I mean,
where would you, if you were to have an opportunity to make an inference where you're just evaluating it and you're saying, you know what, that guy, I felt his connection to himself, not to his role. Like, we know how to meet our role. Like, every human being knows how to show up in the face of adversity. And that's usually the adversity of the inferiority complex, right?
Yeah.
A real mark of a person's power, their capacity, is what they do when they're put into positions of power and opportunity, and more so their vulnerability, which is you outside of your role. That's where I think you really get to experience that person. Mm-hmm. You get to experience them, not the role that they're playing, but experience them. How many chefs do you meet who you get to meet that side? And how many of them have that available, I guess?
I feel like it's a very difficult question to answer. I mean, I obviously know a lot of chefs, more than the average person for sure. Tons and tons of chefs. I know chefs who seem like they're very sure of themselves. I get to spend time with these chefs and a lot of chefs outside of work and stuff like that. But very challenging question. And I mean, it's not just chefs. The question could obviously go for anybody that I interact with, right? But in terms of chefs... successful chefs and well-established chefs. I mean, tough question for me to kind of
digest. Well, here, if I can mirror it, like in healthcare, I was mentioning to you earlier that I feel that I have more opportunity to instill senses of humanity in a healthcare transaction. When I'm seeing a patient, I'm playing the role of doctor, they're playing the role of patient. They're a human and I'm a human. And I recognize that by bringing that plane back, we have a greater opportunity to connect. People want to be seen, heard, acknowledged, understood, at the very least. Remembered, not forgotten, tenderly held, whatever it is. All of those things, so they can be witnessed. And hopefully they can witness you as well. There are a few roles, opportunities for that when we're playing our roles. When I'm among my peers... you're meeting a bunch of other people who have had similar types of mechanisms, no different than when we use substances before, of I'm enabling you as you cope this way, and I'm asking the agreement that we do the same thing too. And where I have a lot of healthcare, I hold a lot of incredible regard for healthcare workers and their capacity to support people in their greatest time of need. Are they meeting a human that's holding them and present to them as well too? And I'll ask healthcare workers, like, how present to your life do you feel? And honestly, I would say under 5% of them have I got the feeling that they even have a glimpse of that and spend any time with it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And when I started working at a new hospital about 6 months ago, I was really hesitant to show this side of me to the patients. I thought, I'm in a big hospital in the middle of the city. I have to be like... way smarter. I have to be sharper. I have to be fast. I have to be all this stuff. But then I'm like, that's not me though.
Right.
If they're not getting me, they're getting a facade, a jester rather than the artist. And so I shared some of my truth with some of the physicians and I opened up and I saw them open up as well too. And they were saying, they almost all led with, I would have never expected this. And that's really intriguing. And then I saw them in pondering self-reflection, which was so beautiful to see.
Of course.
Because it's so humbling to be invited into that by your peers. But it's so rare because my role is meeting yours at this time.
Yeah, but you made that space available to them, though, right? By you doing you. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, and hopefully that's the case that we all do, that we're so at peace with ourselves in recognizing that the role isn't us. It's a part of us. It's a role that we're playing temporarily. That may be what the society reveres you for. It's how you meet your needs. It's how you make your livelihood through the finances, but it's not you. And I want even my colleagues to meet more of me than just the role that I play. And that ultimately ends up being a gift, because I think a lot of them find difficulty putting their guard down. And like, that's why I was asking, because my new metric, dude, is in relation to the thing that you do and the money that you make. If that's what society says, like, that's where your worth is. I want to know that in relation to how present you can be to your life. And if that is not in conjunction, there's something that has the opportunity to be addressed.
Thank you for sharing all that, because now that you answered it and mirrored it and then showed me like how it is for you at work, I understand the question more. But really, all I can really say, though, is I do hope that the steps that I've taken over the past little while to be more open, be more vulnerable, be more me, and not care so much about what everyone thinks around me, is that I just hope that my peers are encouraged more to do the same, and to mm-hmm. be more real, and, you know, to be more maybe present outside of those roles that we play on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I in that same light, like I can invite any healthcare worker, anyone who's actually walking alongside and we happen to meet, I invite you to consider how you can be in a realness and rawness that feels unfamiliar, but you have a curiosity to want to be experiencing yourself and connecting with another human, and we can practice it. There's no failure if things don't work out that way, but I'd love to make that space where you can come and share some of the things that you may have been hiding for a long time on your own. Make this be the first place, one of many potentially, that you can open yourself up back to yourself, back to your colleagues, back to your world. And I'd guess that you can do the same thing with your colleagues as well.
Absolutely.
And your people.
No doubt. I mean, I'm listening to you speak, and I'm listening to you, you know, invite others to join that space and to be free. And I'm just thinking, like, this is all really new to me, you know? It's all really, it's a lot. It's a lot to process. Because, like, part of me is like, man, that's really dope. That's really encouraging. That's really inspirational. But there's still that fear there. There's still that, like, what does all this really mean? You know what I mean? Like that's where I'm at, kind of thing with it. I'm doing my best, but it just seems like a lot, man. It's like, Devin, like, how do I identify what that space is, you know, between what you're saying? Like how do I know I'm here and I need to go there, and vice versa? So I'll just remain, you know, the student here and continue to learn and continue to do things through trial and error. That's how I've learned a lot and gotten to this point. By taking risks, you know, no risk, no reward. That's a big thing of mine that I like to say. So I'll continue to remain teachable and to, you know, not expect things to come overnight, and just continue evolving as much as I can, as much as I'm allowed to.
Well, dude, without opening something else up, you just mirrored an enormous thing back to me that I didn't come upon. The ultimate, like what we were talking about, I think throughout this whole thing is, like I was mentioning, the paradox of where fear and liberation are so close to one another. That thing that you fear the most ultimately ends up being a space of liberation if you stay there and see with a little shift. You've been looking at it this way and it's just a little shift now, and wow, the door opens up.
Yeah.
The invitation that I bring to the world is like that I try and embody in my life, and that I do feel like I embody most days, is the invitation that I wanted when I was younger. Right. I remember being ostracized, I felt, in high school and not welcomed in. Like, I can feel how it's melting my inner world right now to be there. Like, I remember, like, a kid throwing an apple at me, and, like, I remember everyone laughing, and I said, fuck you, you piece of shit. Like, I'm going to always be above you, and I'm going to like do things in life that's so much more than you. Like, I remember seeing his face, and I was so pissed off. Like that was my response at age 14, that I said, like, I'm never going to be received by these people, but I wanted to just be accepted for who I was.
Right.
And it took me going back to that place like 4 years ago and standing in that place. And I stood in that spot where I felt not received for who I was. I didn't realize this layer till just now, that like I just wanted to be invited to the circle. I wanted to be invited into the space. And because I didn't receive that invitation, at least at that moment, through the pains of the life experience subsequent to that, I make damn sure that others are invited to it for the possibility of that. They don't have to put their hand back out, but I want them to know that that space is safe and that I'd love to be connecting with them as well too. But probably a part of where that originates is there where I didn't feel the invitation.
That's so powerful, man. Thank you for sharing that. When I was 12 or 13 years old, I was dancing with this girl. There was a school dance or something like that. I was grade 8. So yeah, I would have been 12 years old or something like that. And I was wearing these jogging pants. They must have been my brother's, right? Because they didn't fit me properly. And like the drawstring didn't work properly on it. I don't know that I've ever told this story publicly. I think I might have shared it before. But anyways, I'm dancing with this girl. I definitely remember her name. And as we were like slow dancing or something like that, the drawstring came loose or something and my pants fell. Their jogging pants fell. And I remember picking them up and like bolting to the bathroom. And I believe I started crying. My best friend came in at the time, and the school teacher came in at the time too, Mr. Cook. And he shared a really intimate story with me, you know, in an effort to, and I look back and I see how amazing it was of him and vulnerable of him to do that. But one thing I'm getting at with this whole story is that I thought that I would never be accepted again. I thought I would never live this down. I thought I'd be known as that guy forever whose pants fell while dancing. I thought that people would constantly make fun of me. I thought all these different things that actually hadn't happened yet. And you know what happened when I came outside? No one said a thing. I never heard about it again. Around me, like it was never brought up again. It's like almost it didn't even happen. And I realized at that moment that no one really cared. Like it was just a thing that happened. Yet it took me so many years to really shed that fear of what people thought about me, right?
From that moment?
That was a big moment for me, man. That was a really impactful moment where it was just like, I've never felt more embarrassed in my life.
Yeah.
I thought, and when you're at that age, when you're in grade 8, something like that, like that's my world. Like that's everything to me. I don't have the knowledge or foresight to know that this is just a moment in time when I'm 13. Not to mention in 50 years, no one will ever remember any of this stuff ever again or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's one of the moments from my childhood that's like etched into my brain as a very, very, as a moment that I'm just overcome with emotion that I don't know how to process or handle. And it's all just fear, 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 fear. What if, what if, what if, what if?
Yeah.
As opposed to just accepting it and letting it go. So that moment carried throughout high school, throughout my 20s and well into my 30s. Like,
mm-hmm.
What are people going to say about me? You know,
yeah.
What are they going to think? How are they going to judge me? How are they going to react?
Yeah, man, I appreciate you sharing that as well too. Yeah.
I felt the olive branch, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, we grossly overestimate the impressions that others are going to have about us. If you think about how many things you yourself are consumed by, chances are others are deeply involved in their own things the vast majority of the time. But if there are things that you can close your eyes and go back to right away, it's either moments of euphoria or breakthrough or borderline traumatic or challenging.
Right.
And those leave beautiful signatures for you to go back to. If there's still a charge associated with it, it's reclaimable through greater shifting the perception of it that changes your relatability to it. And it's life can take us through that. It doesn't have to let you, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to free you from the pain or the charge of it. Chances are it's going to be present, and
yeah,
but hopefully it walks in unison with you, hand in hand, rather than being something that's in the way of you that prevents you from just leaping with some faith and some grace into life.
Being hand in hand with it is interacting with it, is exploring, is navigating through it, which are all things that in life, any obstruction or anything that really, really bothered me or any fear, it's like I kept it at bay and I kept it out of sight, out of mind. So like walking hand in hand with it or just feeling it and just being there with it, I think that's super powerful, man. And
yeah,
it's something like exploring is something I do a lot of these days.
Yeah.
And I can explore anywhere because it's all up here and in here, right?
Yeah.
So no matter where I'm at, I'm constantly exploring my inner self, which is a place I was very afraid of for a long, long time, man.
Yeah. It brought me back to thinking about the Q&A versus curiosity and exploration.
Right.
And I feel that the curiosity and exploration has this expansive capacity versus Q&A is a reinforcing of who you already are capacity. Mm-hmm. It seems to have that energy for me. Want to be respectful of our time.
Yeah.
I know some of our homies are going to be arriving as well now too, man. Want to thank you for the opportunity to come out and receiving this extension of invitation to come and speak and really bringing forward some of that thing that's close to your heart. Are there any final words that you'd like to share before we sign off?
I'm very grateful for the frame of mind and state of mind and headspace that I'm in today. And I'm grateful to you for allowing me to come here and share how I truly feel, because for most of my life I didn't. I always told some other kind of fairy tale or whatever I thought you wanted to hear. So the more and more time I spend in this place, the more and more I become more comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really value you as a friend. And I hope to continue to learn from you because you've unlocked some really, really big things for me, man. And I'm looking forward to doing this again.
Yeah, dude. Thank you, man. Likewise. In many ways, doing this again, coming up here and connecting with you in one place of many. And you, as much as you're sounding like it sounds like I'm giving you a lot of value, you do the same thing for me as well, too. And want to give you the opportunity that if you ever feel like I'm coping or like something out of integrity in any way, call me out. And I don't feel like it's going to be an attack from you, because I feel like at its core, there's love that's there, and you're seeing my plate and you're knowing my ingredients in my life. And I appreciate that you create the dishes for so many individuals. That's going to have, and already has to such a degree, beautiful ingredients from you already.
God bless, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, man. All right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks, man.
Is it good?
Yeah. Good. It's real. Very real.
Yeah.
Very real, man. Very real.
Yeah.
Oh. It's perfect. It's freezing.
Consider leaving a review and rating the podcast. I'm not going to tell you what to rate. You do as you feel. And please, before this podcast ends and you go on to the next thing, take 3 to 5 minutes in silence to allow some of the information that you heard to be contemplated, digested, and integrated. To the degree that every experience has a moment to actually have it be processed, it has a greater chance for it to be instilled into your life. I wish the rest of your day and week is beautiful. Take care, remain curious, and don't forget to play.